Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further, faster. I'm Andy Stanley, and I'll be your host today. But before we jump into today's content, I want to tell you about an offer from an extraordinary company called Belay, B-E-L-A-Y. Several of my friends and associates use this incredible organization. They offer five-star virtual assistance services and virtual bookkeeping for churches, nonprofits, and businesses. We've had several people ask questions about creating high-performance teams after the episode this past fall and how to foster teamwork in a remote context. Well, that's what makes Belay remarkable, and that's why they are one of our sponsors. They're an award-winning, all-remote company where everyone works from their home offices, and they're the leader in how to create high-performing remote teams both within their own organization and for their clients. And they hope that you will check them out and perhaps become one of their clients. For our podcast listeners, Belay is offering their free download of 13 ways to build a high-performance remote team. 13 ways to build a high-performance remote team. It's filled with tips on keeping the team remote but performing as if they're all in the office together. You can download it at their website, which is belaysolutions.com/Andy. Belay Solutions, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/Andy. And now, let's jump into today's content. I'm very excited because, first of all, I get to host rather than answer questions. And the reason I get to host is because I have in the studio with me today my friend of about 20 years. I don't know, Tim.
1997, I think it was.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Reggie Campbell had a mentoring Saturday morning, and right. I think we were both there. And,
wow. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Way back. Anyway, Tim Elmore is in the studio with me to talk about, are you ready for this, the importance of generational diversity in the workplace. Let me say that again. Generational diversity, because we talk so much about diversity, and I promise you, podcast listeners, this is going to be one of the most helpful podcasts we ever do and perhaps that you ever listen to, because I don't know of anyone else in the marketplace that's talking about generational diversity, especially in the marketplace. So, Tim, welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Yeah. Tim's the president and founder of Growing Leaders. He's a best-selling author. He literally, this isn't hype, is an international speaker. He's a world-renowned expert on Generation Y and Generation Z, and if you don't know what those are, it's a good thing you're listening. Tim uses his research to equip leaders, educators, coaches, parents to equip young adults with life skills and professional skills, and again, we've known each other for many, many years. The reason Tim is here today is a few months ago, we did an event with our organization where we had 500 or 600 professionals for breakfast in one of our facilities, and after breakfast, Tim spoke for about 45 minutes on the topic he's going to talk about today. And as I sat there, I was taking notes as fast as I could. I was feeling woefully behind in my leadership as it relates to this topic. And then I thought, why have we not had Tim on the podcast to talk about this? So this is going to be a lot of fun. And so let's just jump in. So Tim, again, we hear a lot about diversity in the marketplace. But you argue that it's important for leaders and managers to understand generational diversity. So what is generational diversity, even though I would imagine we can guess to some extent? And again, I'm tempted to say, and why is that important? But I think as soon as most leaders hear the phrase generational diversity, they know it's important. Why is it important, and what do we do?
Yeah, well, just like there is ethnic diversity, gender diversity, I'm seeing in the workplace generational diversity where there might be as many as four generations working together, or at least supposed to be working together, collaborating, but that 21-year-old intern is not at all relating to the 61-year-old veteran there.
Right.
And sometimes we just avoid each other. Just like if you're in a cross-cultural relationship, you're in another country, you go, I can't talk to that person. I don't speak their language. I don't have their customs. I don't share their values. Bingo. We have different values, customs. And so, Andy, you've thought this before, I'm sure, but I feel like the phone, the smartphone, has both connected us and divided us. Somebody once said, when our phones had leashes, we were free. Now our phones are free and we have leashes.
Wow.
And we're tethered to each other, but we're all banded with the same age group kind of, rather than saying, I want to mix it up with a 61-year-old or whatever. So I feel like we need to work on
this. Yeah, those of us who have traveled internationally know exactly what you're talking about. We see the person and we realize we're not sure we can communicate with them, but we try anyway, don't we?
And we work hard at it.
Oh, yeah. We talk louder.
And slower.
And we talk slower. And we think the lights are just going to come on.
That's right.
And to some extent, we do that cross-generationally too, don't we?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's almost funny if yep. it weren't sad, how you hear stories of the older and the younger talking offline to us who are leading focus groups and going, oh my gosh, he has no idea. But I feel like, boy, if we could leverage the benefits of each generation, yep. what could our organizations do? It would be amazing.
Well, every leader listening wants to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no disconnect. Anybody that's disconnected from this tension isn't leading. And anybody yeah. that wants to lead their organization into the future mm-hmm. understands not only should they do this, we have to do this, but I'll speak for, you know, my yeah. generation, it is intimidating.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, I have three kids, they're all in their 20s.
Yeah.
And even when I'm with them, I'm fine. But when I'm with their friends, I feel stupid.
yeah.
And at the
yeah.
same time, I think I'd like to hire all of them. They're so confident mm-hmm. and yeah. competent. But yeah. I feel kind of stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about
okay.
that. When you did this presentation a few weeks ago, you talked about expectations within mm-hmm. the various generations yeah. working today. Some organizations have as many as you said, like four. This is yeah. amazing. Four generations attempting to work together. Can you talk a little bit about the expectation piece?
Andy, you and I probably have talked about this at some point in the past, but I feel like satisfying people is pretty much about managing expectations.
So wait, say that again. That's a big piece of this.
Satisfying people is pretty much about managing expectations. Every new batch of every new generation coming in has a certain expectation. Millennials brought a huge expectation. I'll be the VP by 26, maybe, you know, because we told them they were awesome for putting the fork in the dishwasher, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
But now Gen Z's a little different. They're the ones behind the millennials. So I think if we understand expectations, now we can mitigate the distance. And one thing I like to say, Andy, is conflict arises when there's a distance between expectations and reality.
Yeah, say that again, too. That's so huge. Okay. Conflict arises
when there's a distance between the expectations Bob has and the reality Bob experiences. And it gets bigger with the expansion of that distance. I don't think leaders sometimes realize that's why they went ballistic. It wasn't that they lost the paperclip. It's what has been happening for 3 months because you yeah. weren't connecting with me.
And if we don't understand what the expectations are, we're in trouble. And if we're not able to distinguish between the categories of expectations
yeah.
with the diversity in the marketplace, we're going to have trouble as well. And
oh,
I think when I heard
mm-hmm.
you talk about this, I immediately, of course, people came to mind,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Different
yeah.
segments within mm-hmm. our organization. And I realized, of course, I lead according to my
yes.
expectations,
yes.
right? Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think, well, everybody expects what I expect and
yeah.
nothing could be further
yeah.
from the truth. So before we go down that rabbit hole, let's talk specifically, just for the sake of definition, about the specific generations that you're talking about.
Okay. Well, depending on what social scientists you might read after, some date the generations slightly differently. But every generation comes of age. They move from school to career, backpack to briefcase, with a set of experiences during their first 20 years. So the oldest generation that might still be working around would be the builder generation. They were born between 1929 and 1945, and they were builders because they were building during a very difficult time. My dad is a great example. My dad was born in 1930, so the first decade of mm-hmm. his life was the Great Depression. The next 5 years, World War II. So that shaped him.
Yep.
He's frugal. He's conservative. He's turning the light off when he leaves the room and saving
yep.
the wrapper paper at Christmas. You know, all those things that our parents did, you know, and taught us to do. So I think their paradigm when they came of age was just be grateful you got a job.
Yep.
It wasn't find your passion. That was not even a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
It was just be grateful you got a paycheck. And my dad has said that to me, even though I started Growing Leaders. He said, just be grateful you got a job, you know. All right. So then the next one would be the baby boomers, and that would be you and I. Boomers were born between 1946 and 1964, and we were called baby boomers because 9 months after World War II was over, the maternity wards filled up. It was a boom of babies, 76 million kids born in 18 years. So the boomers grew up in a time of expansion, unlike the Great Depression. So I kind of give us the narrative, I deserve better.
Yeah.
I deserve a better life than mom and dad had. And we did. We felt that way all through our growing
yeah,
up.
I'm going to take advantage of what they gave me, but I'm going to take
yes,
it a step further.
That
really was the expectation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were proud of us and were happy mm-hmm. we could do that.
That's yeah. right. I felt that from my mom and dad.
Yeah,
I think
I
you did too.
Yeah.
yeah. And then come the baby busters or Gen X. Gen X is the title that kind of stuck, Andy, with this generation. But they were originally called baby busters. They were born between 1965 and 1982. Some of you listening will say, that's me. The reason Gen Xers were originally called baby busters is because their generation started at the public introduction of the birth control pill. So instead of a boom, it was a bust.
They're lucky to be alive. That's what you're saying.
Just be grateful you're alive.
Yeah, be grateful. Yeah, that should be their mantra.
That's
be
right.
grateful
That's right.
we're alive.
Well, you know, in all seriousness, there was the birth control pill and there was Roe v. Wade
yeah.
in 1973. So you had 46 million in that generation, not 76 million.
Yes, and yes. that's a big deal right there.
Yeah.
Just the difference from 76 to 46
it's
million
huge.
Births yeah,
yeah.
in the U.S. Yeah.
Well, think about the economy. Think about Social Security.
Yep.
I mean, that's not the podcast topic, but
yep.
this is huge ramifications on voting and
workforce,
paying into the system.
Lots
yeah.
of things, yeah.
Right. So I gave the baby busters or Gen Xers the life paradigm. Keep it real.
Yeah.
When they were growing up, it was a much tougher time. From 65 to 82, the Vietnam War was going on, and it was on TV. The Watergate scandal was happening. The gas lines were forming at gas
yep.
stations. It was scary. And so basically, as kids, they saw adults around them feeling a little more skeptical about politicians, a little more skeptical about business leaders and corporate America and so forth. So keep it real. All right, real quick, after the baby busters or Gen Xers come the Gen Yers, which is the millennials. And I basically tag these as the people born in the 80s and 90s,
yeah.
1983 to 2000. I gave them the life paradigm. Life is a cafeteria.
Wow.
And the reason I did is because—
You don't even have to tell us.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's a buffet, isn't it?
That's right. Pick and choose.
Yeah, yeah. that's exactly
In any
right.
order you want and
yeah.
go back for seconds.
Yeah,
Start
it's
with
true.
Dessert, yeah.
And, we've given them this. We customized their life, but it was pretty much, I'm making this up with my college experience— Three or four mm-hmm. colleges for one degree.
Or create your own degree now, right?
That's exactly right. Make up your major.
Yep.
Yeah. This is true. I mean, it's true with our music. We have a playlist of my personal favorite songs, mm-hmm. one song at a time. So you see this everywhere you go. And then lastly, the youngest population we're measuring today is Generation Z, following Generation Y. One historian called them the Homelanders because their generation started at about the same time as the Department of Homeland Security.
Hmm.
So terrorism's been a normal part of the conversation. Two economic downturns since 2000, racial unrest, uncertainty, complexity, just lots of things happening. So I have given Gen Z, these are the kids probably of many of the listeners, I'm coping and hoping. So even though they might send out a silly Snapchat video, it's a stressful time. There's a lot of angst. There's a lot of depression. So anyway, these are some of the patterns. Now, one thing I would say I would love the listeners to be thinking about, as I just described the narrative of each one, what I notice as I look at all five generations is it moves from a narrative of caution over to confidence with the baby boomers, back to caution, Gen X, mm-hmm. to confidence with the millennials, and back to caution with Gen Z. I'm stressed out. I don't know if I'm going to get into the right college. I don't know if I'm going to get a good job. So even though that's probably not true, they yep. feel that way. It's a little more dark.
When yeah. you presented this to the business folks in our organization a few weeks ago, you played some music.
Yeah.
You picked a song that you felt like was yeah. thematic for each of these, for the yeah. last three, actually.
Yeah, right.
And I could just feel both the energy and the lack of energy in the room as mm-hmm. it's like our eyes opened to, oh my gosh, you're exactly right. Both the
yeah.
tone, the textures,
yeah.
the simplicity, complexity, and the lyrics
yeah.
of the music that characterized these generations. And yeah. it's so very true. And of course, there's exceptions
yeah.
to every rule, but
right.
in general, yeah, this makes
there's
a lot
narrative.
Of sense. Yeah.
And I just think it's important for leaders to know the narrative. There's different, this is not psychology, it's sociology.
Mm-hmm.
So we have different personalities and optimists, pessimists, but this is a narrative of a generation that we need to know as we lead them. I think for Gen Z, we need to be hope givers. I want to give you hope. You can do this. Mm-hmm. You can change the world. It's going to be hard work,
yeah.
but you can do it.
And you yeah. have to tell the millennials it's going to take more than 15 minutes,
<That's>
right? Or maybe 20, it could take 20
yeah,
to 25
right.
minutes. Yeah, because their optimism, it's wonderful. Okay, so Tim, hold that thought because I want us to get super practical in this next segment. But before we do that, as I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, Belay, our sponsor, is actually offering a free download entitled 13 Ways to Build a High-Performing Remote Team. So you can create high-performing teams even if your team isn't located at the same place or in the same facility. You can download the tool and find out more about Belay at www.belaysolutions.com/Andy. That's www.belaysolutions, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/Andy. Okay, Tim, back to our topic. What do we need to know? Because that's a lot of information. Some of us have heard some of that before. But again, our listeners are asking the question I was asking that day. So what do I do? So give us a framework we can begin to use as we interact with the generational diversity.
Yeah, good. Well, first of all, I think I need to admit that I'm going to go into interactions like you suggested earlier, expecting them to be like me. And I've got to stop that. I keep going back to that cross-cultural thing.
Yeah.
If I'm in another country, I don't expect that French man to be just like me or that Croatian man or that Russian man. So we've got to enter these saying, what's going on in their mind? And I like to use the phrase, we got to read them before we lead them.
Wow.
So it's just a simple little nugget, yep. And it's pithy and cliche. But let's just take the different
them.
Generations. Yeah. So I think each generation brings a different value. So baby boomers, think about a baby boomer. They've been on the job a long time.
Several jobs.
Yeah, that's right. Several jobs and for decades. Decades, not years. So we need to draw from the boomers, if they're willing, stories from their career. They've experienced similar times, different economies, but similar economies. And so life coaching, they're wonderfully positioned to be life coaches and from experiences in comparable times. Awareness of the pitfalls. They know all the things that happened in the 70s and 80s and 90s and, mm-hmm. you know, first decade of the 21st century. So we need to look to boomers for that veteran story, that way, sage wisdom, perhaps, mm-hmm. that they could have at 59 or 60 or 61 years old. For Gen Xers, I think it's realism. I think it's authenticity. Remember, keep it real was their narrative. Resourcefulness, I think they had to learn to be resourceful. I mean, they were latchkey kids growing up, so they learned how to figure life out and just make it happen. They see the pros and cons very well. They're far enough into their career that they've got some knowledge about that. So we need to seek that realism and authenticity from the Gen Xers. They're often in management by this point. For millennials, my gosh, confidence, they're tech savvy, they're very optimistic. They often do think they can change the world by noon on Friday, you know, that sort of thing. And they're very aware of their influence. Think about it. They became young adults when social media was really on the screen, and they're aware that with one tweet, it could go viral.
Yep.
With one post, it could go viral. So they're aware of their influence. We need to leverage that as supervisors to help put them to use that way. So I think that's huge for us just to realize there's benefits to every generation. There's not – well, there are liabilities, but we need to see
– Yeah.
We need to grab hold of the
benefits. So inviting them into the conversation at those four different levels – would be, I mean, we've just created on-ramps for those three different levels. So for the boomers, tell me your story. In fact, share with us a bit of the story for the Gen Xers. Where do you see a lack of authenticity?
I mean,
that's may exactly. not be their word, but that's the emotion. And then for millennials, give them opportunities and leverage their confidence. And the thing I love with the millennials that I work with, and one of them is living back at home now. She finishes up graduate school, which we love, is that sense of energy and I can do anything because I need more of that sometimes. So can I
volley back real quick?
Oh, please.
This very scenario you just painted, we just had a meeting in our office. So we partner a lot with businesses, with schools, universities, athletic departments. And we had a meeting where we purposely had four generations on purpose in the room. And the boomer was asked questions just like you suggested. Have we tried this before? What happened? But the millennial, we're saying, is there another app that just came out that we could use leverage for marketing? But we were able to seize the day because we had difference, in spite of.
Right.
So I think leaders need to know that.
So as exciting as that sounds, collaboration can be a bit difficult.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the person sitting at the end of the table, which oftentimes in my case is me, can make it difficult. Again, if I'm bringing my expectation to the table and I want everything to be filtered through that. So what makes it so difficult and what can we do? Help us, Tim.
Yes. Well, I have two thoughts and I hope they're relevant here. When I talk to employers, oftentimes, not all, but oftentimes, parents become a part of the conversation, meaning the young employees we've just hired, the parent continues to intrude, well-intentioned. You might call them well-intentioned dragons sometimes, but they're well-intentioned. They get involved.
This is for millennials and Gen Z?
So 18 to 34, 35.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's crazy. One would think they would let go, but it's a well-intentioned mama, but here's a picture. So I just did an event for chief human resource officers, and one lady came up to me at the break and said, Tim, I thought this might be an anomaly, but it's happened 6 times in the last 2 months. She said, I just handed a job offer to a recently graduated student who's now a professional, and each of the 6 said thank you, but then they paused and said, but now my mom needs to interview you. to make sure you're a suitable boss for me.
Oh, wow.
Now, all six were ushered to the door. They didn't get the job because mom wanted to.
Why? Well, for the same reason.
Can you imagine? Well, I got to be honest with you. I talked to a college student recently that said, my mom is like my agent. You know what an agent does? They negotiate. And that's what mamas are doing. So not all the problem, but one problem is we need to let these kids grow up and become their own person, their own agency.
Yeah.
I have agency here. So the other thing I would say, Andy, and I think you've seen me do this. I have created a couple of columns that tries to help leaders think through this issue. I call it Our Scene Today. And in these two columns, there's a left column, right column, if you're trying to picture this, listeners, in your mind. On the left-hand column, I offer five words that spell the word scene that simply describe our 21st century world that we're in, of high tech and smart technology. You'll immediately hear these words and go, yep, that's our world today. Yep. Off to the right, though, I try to offer the unintended consequences, what we didn't see coming with this wonderful smart technology. So real rapidly, the letter S in scene reminds me our world today is full of speed. And we love the speed at which things are happening, high speed internet access. Unfortunately, an emerging generation, not all, but many, might think, well, because of that, slow is bad. I don't like slow. I can't even navigate slow. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I think I'm probably less patient than I was 20 years ago because of the high speed. But think about it. If you're growing up in that world, our kids, we're going to have to help them navigate slow because you and I both know some things happen slow. Good marriages happen slowly.
Yep.
The letter C in scene. Our world today is full of convenience. And we all love the modern day conveniences we enjoy. But if I'm growing up in a world of convenience, I might draw the conclusion hard is bad. So the number one phrase that K-12 educators in America say they hear from students is, this is too hard. They tell their teacher that as if they can weigh in. You know, and teachers go, we've been doing this math equation for decades now.
Yeah, which may mean it's just taking too long.
Uh-huh, that's exactly
because they,
right.
Because they equate those two things.
And I want to go on to something else now because I'm bored. Yeah. The letter E in scene, our world is full of entertainment. And now it's in our hands with us everywhere we go. If I grew up in a world of entertainment, though, like that, it's easy to assume that boring is bad. Now, I'll admit, when I was 16, I didn't like boring either. But what we know now, thanks to neuroscientists that we didn't know then, is this. Our brains actually need boredom. They say it's in times of boredom when there's space up there and there's margin in our day that we develop creativity and empathy. Think about it. If I'm living in a world of noise and clutter and earbuds are in all the time, I'm not thinking about anybody else. I'm just trying to get through the day.
Right.
And I'm thinking this is maybe a young generation that are full of potential, but they need space. They need quiet, maybe. The letter N, for N scene, our world is full of nurture. And all I mean by that is we have nurtured the emerging generation, not all, but many. We've become safety obsessed, helmets and pads and belts and everything else.
Yep, and take away anything that's potentially dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if we do that, think about the message we might be sending. They might be drawing the conclusion, risk is bad. Hmm. Well, 72% of high school students in America, 72%, want to be entrepreneurs. They don't want to work for the man. They want to do their own gig. But they're the most risk-averse population we've ever measured. So that didn't go together. You know that. You're an entrepreneur. You know, there's risk involved. And then the last letter E, real quick. We live in a world of entitlement. We all feel entitled to perks and benefits, old and young. But if I grew up in a world of entitlement, it could be easy to assume that labor is bad. I shouldn't have to work for this.
Yeah.
Now, all I'm suggesting, listeners, in this is this. If you think about those words that I just described, slow, hard, boring, risk, and labor, all bad, those are the very components that grow me into a good worker, into a good adult, into a good leader, into a good husband, into a good father. So I'm simply saying our marvelous world of 21st century technology is stripping away the very elements that would naturally build life skills in us. So we may have to be more intentional in our equipping than we did 40 years ago.
So what do we do with that? Because I think most of the folks listening are like, oh my gosh, I need to go home.
Yeah,
I need to grab my kids or my grandkids or get all the, you know, everybody in the office together. And, you know, so what as, I mean, you're an employer and a father and you're sitting on a mountain of research.
Yeah.
What do we do with that, especially in the marketplace as we think about the fact that that framework you just described is the framework through which many of the folks we're interacting with see the world and experience the world and experience us. What do you do with that?
If I was forced to boil it down to one single idea, and there's probably 50 that we could talk about, but it would be the notion or the term emotional intelligence. So when we were together at the organizational breakfast we had, I talked about Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Hughes.
Oh, yeah.
What a
yeah.
case study he
yeah.
is.
Talk about that.
So he's an Army officer, and he was in the second invasion at Iraq, and his assignment one particular year was to receive goods coming from America, food, blankets, and clothes for the displaced Iraqi people that were in this particular village. And his job was to get it out, you know, get it out to the people. Well, he knew a white American probably wouldn't be the best person to
distribute.
Yeah. What's in this right. package here, you know? So he thought with his fellow officers, probably the best person to give this to would be a cleric at the local Muslim mosque. After all, that's the safe place for yep. them to go. So he gets his troop. They start marching with their guns and packages. Picture this, marching toward the mosque. All the locals are thinking, oh my gosh, yeah. they're going to bomb this place. So by the time they get to the mosque, it's circled by locals with sticks and rocks, and they're shouting out in Dari and Farsi language. Who knows what they're shouting, but it's a street fight ready to break out. Thankfully, Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Hughes is high in his EQ. He quickly orders his troop to stop about 150 feet from the mosque. He tells them to point their guns toward the ground, so that's vulnerable. He tells them to put their packages down, which might be bombs in the eyes of the villagers. Mm-hmm. Then he tells them to take a knee, the most vulnerable body position I think you can get in. And then he says, look up at the faces of these people and smile. Andy, in a moment's time, one by one, everybody realized this is okay. Mm-hmm. They start dropping their sticks and their rocks. And finally, they find somebody that speaks the language to come forward and explain, we're here to help you, not hurt you. And it wow. was a – now, that was – would you not say that was an emotionally intelligent
yeah.
leader?
And again, in a foreign country where you – not only mm-hmm. – I mean, you can't – not only can you not speak the language, but emotionally yeah. everything is going south
oh, yeah.
quickly. And yet he was able to bridge that.
Yeah.
And the application to us today is?
When you see somebody in your office with a package. Yeah. And, no, I'm just kidding. No. I cannot underscore enough the work of Daniel Goleman and others who've written on this subject.
Yep.
Emotional intelligence is now a greater predictor of success in life than intelligence. EQ is more important than IQ. Now, I want smart people working for me, but yep. I need them to have high EQ. So this is made up of
and this is and obviously EQ is common language for all the different generations.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
How we get there may be different, but this is the common language.
And here's the other bit of good news. While IQ doesn't really change a lot in your lifetime, EQ can be developed. It's like a muscle. It can be built.
Mm-hmm.
So a little strength and conditioning exercises in our disciplines can help us a lot. So rapidly, there's four elements, according to Daniel Goleman, who's written on this, that make up emotional intelligence. It's our self-awareness. So I'm aware of how I come across to others.
Yep.
Our self-management. I can manage my emotions to do what I need to do, even when I don't feel like it. That's huge. Social awareness. So I look around me and I'm aware of how the relationships around me are connected or disconnected. And then finally, relationship management. I can manage the primary relationships of my life. I would want that in every spouse. I would want that in every worker.
Yep.
And if we can build that into our teams, oh my gosh, the camaraderie is going to step up.
Actually, and tell me if you think this is true, if we only coached around those four things, regardless of the demographic or the mm-hmm. generational mm-hmm. diversity,
yeah.
if
yeah.
we coached into the or spoke into those four areas consistently, I would imagine that could potentially make all the difference because,
oh
again,
gosh,
there's
yeah.
that's common ground, that's common need. And even though the approach may be just a little bit different, those are four things everybody understands they need.
Absolutely.
And I would imagine there's enough connection
yeah.
that, you know, again, regardless of who's in the room, everybody's going to be able to identify with those four things because even
yeah.
as you list them and we listen – regardless of what generation you're in, podcast listeners, you're thinking, that's who I want to marry.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
who I want my kids
so
to marry.
Yeah.
That's who I want to date. That's mm-hmm. who I want as an administrative assistant.
Yeah.
That's who I can trust. That's who I want on the board. So again, there's the perhaps the common ground. List them one more time, those four,
okay.
and then we're going to wrap up this conversation.
Okay. All right. So it's self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management.
Wow.
Those are huge.
Yeah. Hey, that's all the time we have today. But Tim, thank you so much. Hey, mm-hmm. would you tell our audience how to get in touch with you or how to find you online? You're going to be back with us next month.
Yes.
But
yeah.
in the meantime, Tim has has some of the most extraordinary, most transferable leadership concepts I've ever found. He calls them habitudes. Mm-hmm. And tell us how they can find habitudes.
Yeah. Easiest place would be just to go to our website, which is growingleaders.com, growingleaders.com. And there's free stuff as well as habitudes there and stuff for leaders. So that would be, hopefully, if that's helpful, that would be good.
It's extremely helpful. Thanks, Tim. Well, to all of our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us and invite you to check out, after you check out Tim's website, go to andystanley.com, andystanley.com, where you can find this leadership podcast, the application guide that goes with it, and a whole lot of other fun stuff. Don't miss next month. We're going to conclude this important conversation with my friend, Dr. Tim Elmore. See you next time.